WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. All of our Wise conversations are now brought to you by Wise Markets. We used to call them intelligent conversations. We've upped our game in this particular segment. And it, you know, I did a segment this week with Wise Markets on backyard grilling, and I'm selling my condo, and it's not often when I have a big star on, I show the light city part of the background, but we're selling the condo. It's where I live. So if you like the view, come by it, please do. But we're moving to where I can grill outside. Kenny Mayne looks like he is ready to retire from wherever the worldwide leader has sent him. He's free agenting. It looks like he's trying out for the XFL or something right now. I know you played a little bit back at the Vegas. Yeah, I mean, this is going to be a better segment. How's your backyard? How's your grilling technique? It looks like you're going to be taking some time off, which is good.
I still am at ESPN for 7 more shows, right? I didn't like Monday. I don't know when this is running, but Monday, what date was that? The 10th of May is when we all decided it, you know, we weren't going to continue together, but I still was on the schedule, right? I worked Monday night. That was the craziest Monday ever. Cause at 2 o'clock, I'm having this conversation about, you know, okay, we're not going to find a middle ground. And I put it on Twitter. And then I was like, damn, it's 7 o'clock. I got to shower and get to work. I'm on at midnight. I need to get to work. I was like frazzled. I feel like I've been in Vegas playing craps 48 straight hours with no sleep, or at Pimlico, you know, running wild like we would when I met you on the roof in what year 2000, I think was.
Yeah, we've been doing this for a couple decades, you and me.
Yeah, literally every Preakness. I came for various reasons. I do a feature story or whatever. Then I covered horse racing, right, for a good number of years. I was the lead host. Then I was the secondary host. And then I would just come sometimes. And then I haven't in a while. But yeah, we've been doing this. This might be the 27 year anniversary of us somewhere in that neighborhood. Not
this
quite
is my long. 30th year on radio. And I feel like I met you in the '90s. I mean, maybe 97, 89, somewhere in there.
First time I ever went was Silver Charm, first Derby. And I went to the Preakness that year as well, I believe.
It was probably that year, because I think talking to you, I'm like, what the hell's Kenny Mayne doing here? I didn't know. And I believe you had just lost a child. Like, you know, it was a lot of things going on in that period of life for you.
Two children, Creighton and Connor. And that's in 1996. And now I have Riley, who just graduated from Colorado. Annie, who's at BU.
Oh,
got
beautiful.
Remarried. Gretchen has Elena going to USC. And Bryn, who we hope. I told Bryn I'll just cash her out. If she can get a soccer scholarship, I mean, it's less just we'll cash you out. Under NCAA doesn't need to know. By then, I think all the athletes will be able to market themselves. Like, what's wrong with your parents? Hand you cash. So, but yeah, it's been a wild couple days, and I'm good. I'm happy. I appreciate all the people who reached out, both on Twitter and personally, who knew me, and I'm good. There's a whole bunch of freedom in it, and it didn't work out to stay, and That's okay. ESPN's going to do fine without me, and I wish them all well. And like, there's just no malice. Like the old, it's just business. It's not personal, which I use that as an NBA expression, right? Like on highlights, and it never meant more than on Monday night, right?
I need to ask you this. Am I the first person you've sat down with and like done this with? Because like,
You're number four.
Okay, that's fine. I didn't know like
we were going to do this. We were going to do this anyway.
I text you Sunday and I said, "Will you come on?" And you're like, "Sure." You always say yes. It's Preakness week, and I thought like it's normal. And then Monday, I'm like doing normal stuff, and I'm on Twitter, and I'm like, "Oh, Kenny Mayne's trending. God, I hope he's all right." You know, first thing you think when your friend's trending, and I'm like, "Okay, I guess he won't be coming on this week." Then I thought, well, Kenny's probably going to be in his backyard wearing sunglasses, holding the football, and just like talking about it, because Kenny Mayne does not run and hide from anyone.
Well, not just that. We've become friends through the years, and why wouldn't I live up to my commitment? I got nothing to hide. I've told the story. Richard Deitch wrote a story today, I think, and I did the Seattle Times, and I'm not out there doing like a big PR campaign. I've been getting requests from old friends and new acquaintances. Hey, can you want to talk about what's happening? And it's good for me too, because I actually am looking for work. So why wouldn't I put myself out there?
Well, when you start the podcast, can I be the co-host or something? Can we do West Coast, East Coast? We can
never know. Anybody who needs a commercial made, here I am telling you I know how to make commercials. There's my first job. I'm also selling greeting cards. I also have a card baseball game with Topps, you know, Topps the trading card company. And you'd like it. I think it's nerdy enough for you. It's basically, my uncle and I made up this silly game when I was like 9 or something. And I hit the Topps people. I said, look, I got an idea. You guys do all the art, right? I just have the idea. And if you go to tops.com, put my name in, you'll see what I'm talking about. It's just a fun little one-on-one solitaire game, or not solitaire. You could play solitaire. It's just like a fun one-on-one card game, right?
You need an NFT, dude. That's what you need. You get an NFT on that, you're good.
I put an NFT on Twitter yesterday. It wasn't really one, but I just said it was one and hoping people. But you know what I did? I then said, if you want to buy this, send the money to my foundation, not to me. And we're helping veterans. Because remember, I broke my leg in college way back when and fracture dislocation. And now I'm old and I got arthritis. And I, you know, I don't wear shoes. I wear flip flops, barefoot, slippers, just no shoes because I have a bad day with shoes. But if I stick my brace on, they like to call it a device, actually. Brace is almost insulting. I can run. I can play golf. I can hike with Gretchen. Flag football, zero pain. It's amazing. And we're getting this for veterans, you know, one at a time. We're just raising enough to get the next veteran moving pain-free. And the stories have been insane. Like, a couple people went back and got jobs. A couple people went back in. One guy just said, dude, I got to go to the beach and play with my daughter. I couldn't do that before. Now I can. Like, that's everything. So I'm hopeful that all the people who responded so kindly about me would now turn their attention to our veterans program, because that's far more important than my cellular career.
I have BJ Ganim on all the time. We become Facebook friends. And yeah, I know. And you play in that game. He invites me every year to play. You know why? I'm an amputee. Can you see that?
I see it.
Yeah. So he always says, you're invited, you're an amputee. And I'm like, you just want me because I look like I got game and good wheels and I could lay out for Kenny Mayne. And then the year I was going to play, Snoop wasn't playing and you were playing. And I thought, I'm not playing the year Snoop's not playing. If Snoop's not playing, I'm not playing.
Dude, to say, I mean, some of the experiences, which is a common question, I'll just lead to, like, you know, I've done a lot of fun stuff at ESPN. Like, I treasure all those moments.
Dancing with the Stars. I remember.
Less so than my ESPN moments. But I got to get Stevie Wonder to say, I can't be at the All-Star game. I have a high ankle sprain. That was Stevie Wonder's line, and he killed it. One take. He did one take. There was no need to do take two, except did the microphone work. And I say, hey, when's that album coming out? And he looked back and goes, soon. And he walks away. That's, come on.
Did you write any of the commercials by any? I mean, it always felt to me like you would be a good storyboard guy for the old ESPN commercials, like when the big orange walks in or whatever.
I didn't necessarily write them going in. They were proprietary about, you know, who thought up what and all that. But depending on the director, absolutely, we wrote them in the moment, right? That's what I do on SportsCenter. We don't write. People think we read off the teleprompter. We read two sentences or a lead into a big feature you want to get it right, or a serious story, right? I take that serious and make sure you're reading the right words that you typed. 90% of the shows, you got notes and you're freestyling. And a lot of those
kind of like this program.
Yes, we don't have notes, right? But we've so far sort of made sense. I don't know if anybody's going to care what we did, but, you know, we're trying. I meant more the commercials where you actually get paid, not the ESPN kind. And I've done a bunch of those for you. I did Black Panther. That was a Disney release with DeAndre Jordan. And that one had a script. But once we started rolling, they're like, do your thing, you know. And they used half of what we did on our own, right? So you could call it writing, or you could call it extemporaneous work, or, you know, if I ran over to a typewriter and typed it really quick and ran back and did it, then I'd be a writer, I guess, you know. But
don't the rappers call that riffing?
Freestyle.
Kenny Mayne is here. We're freestyling it. He is the main event. He's about to go freestyle, or is it, they once said in an Animal House, he's an independent, as they say. Are you in Seattle, or are you Bristol? Where's home?
Connecticut. Okay. We live not far from ESPN headquarters. I think I have 7 shows remaining. I'm back on Friday night. Then I'm off Saturday to watch the Preakness, which I'm sure we're going to talk about. And then I'm going to work on Sunday and Monday. Although Monday, I can let them know I'm coming late because we have a golf event. And I'll just be there when I'm there.
You're quitting anyway. I mean,
I'll be the first. Yeah, what are you going to do to me? I'll be the first one written, as always. And I'll be ready at 11 or 12 or whatever time we're on.
Yeah, just one quick personal question and then one thing on the ESPN. Sunday I texted, did you know you might be parting ways? Did this come as a shock to you, or has this been – because it's a shock to listeners, right? And yeah. I've hired and fired. I've owned a station here for 23 years. It's really weird that you're staying and still working in this industry. That doesn't happen often. But also, it's been a long time. There's mutual respect and all that. But it doesn't feel like it's a shock to you that on Sunday night, hey, I might be leaving ESPN by Wednesday when we do it.
I don't remember our exchange other than we had it, you know, like, you know, I was in the middle of whatever else. What day did you write
me? No, last week, did you think you'd be leaving ESPN this week? Or did you feel like this was going to be going?
Likely, I thought I was out the door.
Fair enough.
But not, I wasn't certain of it. And it wasn't for me to tell every communication I have, hey, by the way, I might be, you know, like, I just answered your question. I would tell you at the point I told, but instead I was like, I think I'll just do my own release. I'll go on Twitter and write what I thought I said it just about right. I thanked the right people. I thanked all the people. Because that's true, like it's a cliche, but I really will miss the people. And I really will miss the vending machine area by the old Scott Van Pelt joint. Like it had everything. You open it up, you got soft drinks, you got real food, you got snacks, you got chips, you got healthy snacks. What more can you want?
Kenny Mayne is here. The last thing on your job and the Kenny Mayne situation, and then we'll get to the Bob Baffert situation, the Preakness and all, and your football you're throwing around and scheduled. By the way, we play in Vegas, your old stomping grounds. It's kicked the season off, so it's going to be a big, big weekend in Vegas. Throw me an email, Ness at Baltimore Positive, if you want to do it. Somewhere along your retirement tour, the announcement that you're going to have a podcast and all these other things that you're kidding around about somewhat on Twitter, the one thing that stood out to me was the letter that you sent that someone shared, maybe it was Deitch that shared with maybe John Walsh, where you had a funny resume that got you in the door. And I saw it dated in 94 and I started to think about it. Cause was it John Walsh or was it Vince Dory? Who was the hiring and firing of you around there?
Well, there were a bunch of different, you know, bosses. The recruitment director was Al Jaffe. You know, he was the one who was the one who would, hey, I see this tape. This kid's good. Let's bring him in. Or, you know, he was that guy, right? And he would handle contracts, and then sometimes it would go, you know, above him if necessary. But Vince Doria, out of the Boston Globe, legendary, he was the head of this new show called Sports Night, not the ABC show called Sports Night, but the ESPN2, right? So there was ESPN, that's all
Vince
it was.
Vince Doria, right? Was a big deal. Like, oh, Vince Doria, so I'm going to share something with you in a minute because I saw your Walsh thing and your letter and your box, check the box is what you wrote.
Yeah, there's a little... Right? This I'll try to minimize. I don't know how much time you have for this, but
no, I got time. Go. Okay. We're good.
Long story short, I played football in college. I went to school for free. I didn't play that much. Broke my leg, played the next year. Sam King was ahead of me. He led the nation in passing. Seahawks wanted Sam King. He turned him down to go to Canada originally. And then my coach, Tony Knapp, said, hey, if you like Sam, you might as well look at the other guy, me, because he can throw just like Sam. He just didn't play very much. So I go throw for the Seahawks. Steve Largent is who I'm throwing to. He happened to be in the building that day. It's like, sure, I'll throw to Steve
Largent. Wasn't doing politics that day.
That should work out. I sign, but I fail the physical because of the ankle, which I just explained about the running, right. You know, the veterans, right? The runfreely.org. And I immediately get a job at this little station in Tacoma, Washington called KSTW. 5 days a week, they have a news show. We always joked, if there's news on the weekends, it's news to us. That was our motto. So I started out as a gopher, you know, I'm just doing whatever and moving up the ladder, producing, doing writing for the anchors. And I just wanted to do news. I had no inclination at all to do sports. I played football. I was into sports, but I was more into news, world history, politics. Like that was where my head was, right? I wanted to be the guy working for Frontline, right? That would have been, if I had that career, I would have been happy, right?
So you're a serious guy that's moved into a whole different place, right?
Literally. Well, I think I'm a little of everything. Like I'm serious about serious things and I'm not serious about less serious. I don't know. Like I have strong opinions. You and I have discussed offline about, you know, this country and what's going on, but
that you can now discuss freely after 7 more shows.
That's true. I haven't done so yet, but I think people knew where I stood anyway. I'm a Sarah Kendzior fan. I think that's all you need to know. Gaslit Nation. Good podcast.
She does a great job. I follow her.
Yes, she's become a friend. I had her when I got to host Pearl Jam Radio. She was my first guest.
She in St. Louis? Is that where she's hailed?
St. Louis. And
yeah, I got to get her on.
We got to get Patriot for her, right? The tribute.
Well, you know, I've taken my sports brand and moved it to Baltimore Positive because, like, I've got mayors going to prison. I've got Freddie Gray fallout. We got racial issues here. We have financial issues. We have business. So the world is bigger than just it's nice to have some jokes and some fun and some sports and whatever.
I think there's no law that I was always hung up on that whole thing, and we're getting off topic.
That's okay.
I'll get back. I'll get back to where
so
I was.
So we do on this program. We meander.
Why is it that people want, you know, the old stick to sport? Like, why? Like, why can't I have an opinion as a citizen about something? And you can have an opinion about elite quarterbacks, and I'm not going to tell you to not stick to, you know, like somebody who doesn't do sports for a living. He or she works in such and such job. They have all sorts of opinions about sports, right? And I have no problem. Everybody can have whatever opinion. Why are they telling me what opinions I can have about what? That's stupid. Like, I'll have a, you know, it's free country. Anyway, so I get moved to sports because basically Jack Eddy's news director, he says, hey, you played football, you're doing sports. We're adding a weekend show, right? And so I do sports a couple of years. This is 87, this is a long time ago, 1987. And I'm doing all right. I'm brand new to it. I'm kind of nervous. I don't know what the hell I'm doing out there. And I'm just kind of making it up. And, but you know, we're interviewing, you know, Seahawks and Huskies and Mariners. Like, I'm doing all this fun stuff. And I was like, sports is kind of more fun than local news. I think I'll start, you know, constant. So I would do the sports on the weekends, and I would do a couple of work days, weekdays about news. Like, I could be at a fire or a murder or whatever. Then on the weekend, I did sports. Super Bowl, whatever number. Joe Montana to John Taylor. They beat the Bengals. John Candy's on the sideline, that whole deal. I have a really good show. At least I think it is. It's 5.5 minutes, you know, which is long for sports, right? Local sports, usually 2 or 3 minutes. And I send the tape to a guy at ESPN. I was like, what the hell? Why wouldn't I? They've been on TV for 10 years. Why couldn't I work there, you know? And I send it to the wrong guy, but it gets to the right guy, Al Jaffe. He calls me like 3 days later or, you know, just a few days later. Hey, that was really good. Send us another tape. We want to see if that was a fluke. I never forget how he said it. Send him another tape. I sent him not just that tape, but 4 more, you know.
We didn't have YouTube back then. These kids don't know.
You had to go ask a friend at work. Hey, can you clip off last night's show or this one story or that funny joke or whatever? I go
all
back.
All those knobs and stuff. I remember all that.
100%. I go back for an interview not long after that. With John Walsh is one of the guys. He, for those who don't know, he's legendary in the game, a Rolling Stone, you know, sports, you know, ESPN created Sports Center's look, all these things he did, right? He's the
I have rejection letters from all these people I'm going to share with you. It's legendary. So, it's awesome.
So I go back and of all the people, one of them is John Walsh. And I remember I'd flown like all day and totally not paid attention to the draft. The draft happened. And the first question, how'd the Seahawks do in the draft? Thinking, you know, I'm a Seattle guy. I must know. I barely knew who the hell they drafted. Like, I was dead tired. They beefing up the O-line. I'm just bullshitting my way through. You know, I don't know what I'm talking about. And then he's asking about the Cubs middle relief or something. Like, dude, what are you talking about? You know, so I fail miserably.
And there's no Twitter in 94,
no,
right?
No, I have no shot. And I'm doing very poorly. In the interview, I know I'm doing poorly. He knows I'm just making shit up. I'm horrible.
It's third and long.
They send me, thank you for coming. We'll be in touch. Sometime later, I quit my local TV job. It's a long, not for this broadcast, just things didn't work out. We saw it differently. I didn't like the direction it was going. I wanted more control over what I was doing, and it just didn't work out. So I said, give me back the weekend show or I quit. And they're like, you can't do that. What are you talking? You know, you're going to get in trouble. It's like, no, I just threatened to quit. What are you going to do to me? So I quit. Now I don't have a job. ESPN sort of likes me, but thinks I don't know enough about sports, which is true and probably still true. And the first thing I do is I call the guy at the garbage company because I had been a garbage man in college a couple summers. I say, hey, I just quit my job. Any chance, you know, I could get on part time, you know, just pay the bills till I figure out what I'm doing, you know? Had a couple of documentary ideas, had, you know, I was going to see what happened next. And he says, well, we're down to one man driver. You know, we have the kind with the forklift thing. We don't have the second guy hanging on the back, the swamper, right? That was me. So the industry had passed me by essentially like during this time. And he said, all I got is we need some garbage cans built. Like you need to stick the wheels and the lid on. And so that I took that job, $10 an hour. I'm out in the rain and can't
walk. Mike Rose got nothing on you, dude. Nothing.
I was just on TV 3 days ago. Now I'm building garbage cans. No offense to garbage can builders, but you know, going from I got this promising thing going with ESPN.
Humility's important when you're in your 20s, right?
So I run out of garbage cans. I burn through the garbage cans because I'm trying to be such a good garbage can maker. I look in the paper and I'm like, my mom had passed away, and I was like, my mom would be so mad at me if I like took unemployment or whatever, you know, like you need to get a job. Like you quit that job, go get another job. So in the paper, This is back when people looked in the want ads, you know, in the actual physical newspapers. And there's a marketing company that looking for, you know, people good voice skills and communication skills, television experience or radio is a plus. And I'm like, they're talking to me.
You're Johnny Bravo at that point.
I call them up. We get the interview. Turns out it was a telemarketing place, not just marketing. And I'm selling now prepaid legal insurance.
Hi, this is Kenny. Do you need some insurance?
I'll play it on you. You ready?
Go ahead.
Hi, is Nestor there, please?
Hi, this is Nestor.
I'm sorry to have bothered you during the dinner hour, sir. This is, I use my friend's
name. Why did you bother me?
This is Warren Tom. Did you hang up? Okay, next call. So, but prepaid legal insurance is an actual thing. I think it's actually a thriving company, and it is a good thing to have. Like, you know, you don't want to spend on an expensive attorney if there's a will to make or a divorce or, you know, some.
I got to go back to dinner, Ken. I'm not a buyer.
I'm selling prepaid legal. In the middle of selling prepaid legal, ESPN calls the station because they don't even have my forwarding number because I had moved and I didn't think to tell them, hey, here's my new phone. This is back when we had
phones. Did you have to explain to them how you quit?
Say what?
Did you have to explain to them how you quit the job or no?
I might have glossed over it. They didn't seem to care. They were like,
so you went from this sales gig to ESPN?
Not yet. I'm not there yet.
Okay.
I'm still selling prepaid legal insurance. ESPN calls the station because they can't. They call my old number and it doesn't answer. This is back when people had phones that had a thing that went in the wall, like a cord that let you talk on a telephone. There's no cell phones. I mean, there were, but I didn't have one. And Jesse Jones, my dear friend, who I hope is doing well, he had a little medical thing, but he's getting better. He's out in Seattle. Good guy. He calls and he says, I won't say the word, but Al effing Jaffe just called. Called ESPN now. What are you doing? You know? So I call. Hey, what are you up to these days? Well, I'm working for a marketing company now. And, you know, decided to leave that station. Just, you know, we didn't see things the right way. I'm looking to get back in, you know, with you guys, obviously. He brings me back for another interview. I still don't get hired. But not long after, now we're up to 1990, I quit the telemarketing job. And now I'm working for a sales company in sales for MCI. Remember the long distance company?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So I'm trying to make corporate accounts, like selling this and that business. And it's a real job. I got, you know, benefits and all that. But I still want to be for ESPN. And the people who hear this story at MCI are like, what's wrong with this guy? Why is he weird? You know, why is he thinking about this? I remember one guy, dude, it's a pipe dream. Just let it go. Just start hustling sales. You can do this. And nothing against those guys. Some guys made a lot of money selling long distance, right? But ESPN calls and says, we want you to cover the Goodwill games. Remember the Goodwill? Sort of like
in Indianapolis or in Cuba?
No, Seattle.
Seattle. Okay, there you go.
The first one was in Russia. The second one was in Seattle.
Am I confusing that with another game? What were the games that were in Indianapolis?
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, it's something different.
All right, go ahead.
So now it's 1990, and I'm now freelancing for ESPN while selling long distance for MCI. I covered Tonya Harding in Portland, covered Cecil Fielder's chase for 50 homers, Gary Payton, Sean Kemp, Ken Griffey. You know,
you're kind of a jobber, a day jobber.
They call it a freelance stringer. And they would pay me $250. And when I got that call, ESPN, hey, need you to go interview Griffey. He hit three homers last night or whatever it was, right? I kind of played it like I was with ESPN. I wasn't really, but it was my, call it what you want, you know, my second job.
ESPN had sent you.
Yeah, they used me often enough that I really did feel like kind of part of the company. It was pretty frequent they had me do stuff. Sometimes I would actually do the story, you know, like I would do the Gary Payton feature or whatever it was. But this is 4 years in the making. This is 1990. For 4 years, I kept...
But very much straight stuff.
Straighter. I did a couple.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I did a couple that were a little sillier. But yes, mostly it was straight feature or straight news. Like the incident where Sam Weich kicked the female reporter out of the locker room in Seattle. And I ran up and interviewed him at the bus. And, you know, that was like a real story, right? And finally, in 1993, ESPN adds ESPN2. And that was Keith Olbermann and Susie Colbert, right? Keith wearing the leather jacket. And they were going to cover sports in a lighter way and X Games.
They were built for me. I was 25 then. It was going to be him. Yep.
Cool graphics, that whole thing.
The deuce.
And I'm like, and I'm thinking, oh, maybe they got more space now, right? Like I should, you know, and I'm flooding them. I called them so often, pitching ideas and just being a bother, right? I crossed that line. I got to be a bother. And in March of what year was that? 94? 94? I decided to hell with it. I'm just going to press the issue and see if I can do something to like wake these people up, because I think I've proven that I belong, but yet they weren't going to hire me full time. I was still, you know, out there in Seattle selling long distance. So the letter was, "Dear John," I think I memorized it, "please check the appropriate box. I'm trying to sort out my career," to that effect. Box number one said, "it just hit us. Contract's on the way. Stand by the mailbox." Second one said, "keep up the freelance work." Third one said, "we'll hire you about the time ESPN 5 hits the air." The joke obviously being they have two now, right? John checks the middle box, writes, "keep up the good work, Ken." Sends it to me in the mail, U.S. mail. I got called again for an interview. Now I'm with Vince Doria. And I already know the book on me is he kind of knows how to do TV. He's a little different. He's bugging the hell out of us. He really
wants to see, I know Vince Doria as the Boston Globe sports editor, right? Yeah. So I'm going to share a few things with you that I've never shared. Can you look down and see this? This is August 10th of 1989. Vince Doria rejected me for the first time. But it's interesting because he says, without getting into details, it might be best to check back in a month or two. Dude, nobody wrote me a letter like that. Like, nobody said check back in. They just said, we're going to file this under T and go away. And then the craziest thing happened. So that letter was dated August the 10th of 1989. And then the most amazing thing happens. A month later, I get this letter. Do you remember the National? That National? Yes,
of course.
He moved to the National. And six
That's
weeks later,
what he was talking about.
He sent me another rejection letter. It was fantastic. I got two rejection letters from Vince Story in 1989.
I got to tell him that story.
And I've never heard from him in 32 years ever again. But I knew he was running ESPN. And I always thought, one day Mr. Doria will hire me. He loved me when he was in Boston. 32 years later, I'm 52. Maybe this is my big chance with Vince. And I also have a rejection letter here from John Walsh. And I don't even remember sending this when this was in 2002. I have no idea how I got rejected by John Walsh in 2002 at ESPN. But I have real rejection letter 2002. "We don't have anything at this time that would mesh with your talents." He clearly knew me. So there you go. I rejection letters from both guys that love you, Kenny. There it is.
That's not bad. I just talked to John Walsh right before. I got to hang up to hurry and get to you. I said,
tell him he missed out on me. I would have been huge. I would
have.
You know what? You didn't need Greenberg. Me and Golic. That would have been the thing.
You would have been fine. I cut off John Walsh call, although it was a very meaningful and pleasant call. But he knew. I said, look, I got to get off a little before one. I got
this
interview.
It's pretty this week.
Right? So we got John Walsh back right there. Like,
all right. Well, it's pretty this week. What do you make? Are you on betamethasone or is this
no,
the
I'm
cortisol
not.
For you?
But can I tell you the end of the Vince Doria? I go in.
Sure. Absolutely.
Knowing I go back for the third time. I'm back for the third time. And now I'm interviewing for ESPN too, right? Because they got this new thing, right? And I say, Vince, I already know kind of the book on me here. Like, you know, you think I'm halfway okay for TV, but I don't know enough about sports. I don't know who the fifth pitcher on the Cubs is, and I really don't care. But if you tell me to do a story on the son of a bitch, it'll be a really good story. And
fair
he's
enough.
Like, I like that. And I got hired. So a couple months later, I'm on ESPN2, and here we are 27 years later.
You know, that's why you're on the show, because you stuck with it. I gave up on Doria back in 89, and the National went away, and then I became a radio guy, and here we are. Kenny Mayne is here, the main event. Leaving ESPN soon. He'll be telling other stories. Let's talk about Baffert and the Preakness, because this is an industry. I know how much you love horse racing. It is something you love. When you talk about not knowing the fifth starter of the Cubs, when I've been with you with horse racing, it's very clear you've spent a lifetime loving horses, and this is a really weird week for horse racing on the back end of the Derby.
That is an understatement. Man, I'm like, I don't even know where to go with this one because it's so convoluted. It's, you know, as we tape this, something else could be happening. I'm not even up to date, except the where I left it last was we interviewed Baffert on Sunday. So Baffert kind of got out, tried to get ahead of the story a little bit. We also interviewed Jay Privman of the Daily Racing Forum. And he forthrightly denied the horse has never been injected with his drug. Not that we gave him some and maybe it didn't wash out of his system. So for those who don't know, it is a legal steroid, not a steroid like the Ben Johnson, Barry Bonds kind of anabolic steroid, but the corticosteroid, right? That is for therapy, right? So
it has been told to me as a bit of an Advil for horses for anti-inflammatory.
There you go. That's not a horrible description. However, the reason why they have the rule that they don't want it in the bloodstream at the time of racing is they don't want to see horses who probably shouldn't be racing, right? So if you're going to give this to the animal, you need to do it so that it's washed out of his system or her system before the race, okay? So the industry standard that has been suggested is don't give it to them any sooner than 14 days before a race. So most of them go even more, like 18 or, you know, like make sure. We don't want to fail a drug test, right? So he fails the drug test, allegedly, right? Has the Racing Commission in Kentucky even said it yet? Because I took it, last 2 days I've been oblivious to any news.
The issue is that Baffert's here and the horses is running, and that is probably going to be unto itself the biggest story this week, right? That Baffert is here. It's a bigger story that he's here than if he's not.
Yeah, but there's a whole nother part of it. Now Baffert released a statement. He said, I'm being transparent. We said we would look into this because we promise you we never gave it to him. We've never given him this drug, not ever, not an overdosage, not we didn't time it out. We've never given it to him. How in the hell could he test at all, right? So they're running that what they call a split test on the blood sample to find out, okay, is the second sample going to confirm it or is it going to say that, oh, it was a bad test? In the meantime, he's now saying they gave him, not gave him, but rubbed on this other topical treatment that they find out has some percentage of this banned, not banned drug, but a drug you're not supposed to use, to have it in the bloodstream, right? I'm thinking, just reading just that alone, okay, I'll go with that story for a minute, except why didn't the veterinarian know the ingredients of the drug? Like, if you know you can't use that drug and have it show up in the system on race day, you don't even put the topical cream because there's a chance the tiny percentage of it might show up. Like, he described it as, it's like a grain of sand or salt in a swimming pool, right? Like it's so small, we can all agree it probably wasn't the thing that made him win.
Well, everyone has agreed with that the horse didn't
outside
win
the rules
because of
if
this
he
drug.
Had it. Right. That's right. The point is rules are rules. They made the rule for some reason. And now we're stuck with, we got the Derby winner, $1,000 sales horse, right? Resold for 40 or whatever it was. You know, out of nowhere, this horse is good. Ran really well in California, but couldn't beat a couple, ran second a couple times in a row, right? I kept looking back. It's like, is there a way I could have bet that horse? Like,
it said Baffert next to it on Derby Day.
Oh, I know why. Baffert's the there you go.
Well, that horse might have been 30-1 without Baffert's name next to it, right?
100%. Maybe not 30, but yeah, definitely 20 or something. So he wins. Johnny V, great ride. And we're all like, whoa, Baffert set the record. That's 7 Derby, the whole thing. And then all this happens. And I want to believe him. He's become more than just somebody I interview. Like, I've known him and Jill for years,
He called me last week. We did 40 minutes talking about, American Pharoah and the surprise and the shock and all of that. I had to drop the tape on Sunday and stop running it because, now he's running again. So I guess it's all relevant again.
Well,
right?
Bottom line is, until, it's innocent until proven guilty. It should be very much the standard. And he deserves that if he's being accused of this thing. And if he has a story that is actually, kind of mitigating. But my problem with the story is simply, why didn't the vet know the ingredients of this drug? And so whether you got it that way or the other way, there's still something that's going to show up, and it's going to be bad news if it shows up in the second sample. In the meantime, why can't they make a test result happen in 24 hours?
Why don't they know before the horse runs to say, this horse is disqualified, this horse has the wrong pee, the wrong whatever, this horse can't run today, instead of having the horse run, have the betting public involved? Because that's really where the integrity is, Kenny, right? Yeah. I mean, the issue with horse racing was the mafia being involved 100 years ago and saying this needs to be on the up and up. And clearly horse racing has a drug problem right now. I mean, that much like baseball had a drug problem and steroids, and that this is something that the confidence of the public and people who support it needs to be there. It's not there right now.
Whatever the truth of it is, that's why I'm not trying to whitewash anything, and I'm not trying to be accusing him more than I'm saying I don't know all the facts yet to know how I feel about it, because we don't have all the facts. Like you said, why wouldn't they try to get the thing cleared up, expedite the test for the good of the game? Nope, test came back. Horse was fine. We messed up the first test. He's good to run. That's one story. The other is double test. He's got it both times, even though it's that much, and therefore he's losing the Derby. Right, Mandaloon moves up, and the people who bet these other horses are irate. Right, they're like, right, you had a horse on. You know, if it's true, everything's qualified, but now you're going to have the eyes of the world are on horse racing four different times a year, besides foreign, you know, the big races in foreign countries. U.S. racing is three Triple Crown races and the Breeders' Cup.
Yeah.
And the other ones, horse players watch them, but the general public doesn't as much, right? So now this, I mean, they may get a great rating, you know, like people are going to be interested what went down in Baltimore, you know? I don't know, man. We're taping this on a Wednesday, and I don't know what's going to happen on Thursday. Like,
well,
I can't say.
I know what's happening. You got seven shows left at the Worldwide Leader. You could tell John Walsh. He says he was going to keep me in mind. Tell him it's been 19 years. But I'm still here, and it's okay.
You're happy doing what you're doing. You seem like you're thriving. You're got sponsors, you know.
We all wanted to work at ESPN, but the God's honest truth is, and I would bore you with this story, Mel Kiper, I interviewed there in 1997. Kiper and I took a train. It was a long story, but at that moment in time, feeling rejected by ESPN felt like, it'll never happen. I'll never be whole. And now I'm 52, and like, it's worked out all just great. It's been great for you. I will follow you anywhere you go, except Fox News. If you go there, I'm not watching, okay?
I feel you. Hang on one second. You fill with an advertisement while I Google something really quick.
Okay. Well, next time you're in, well, I'm doing a crab cake tour this summer. In August, I'm doing 30 crab cakes in 30 days.
Oh, I love it.
Remember, I did 30 ballparks in 30 days.
You just reminded me. Do you want the best crab cake ever?
Don't tell me it's in Seattle.
Manhattan Beach, California.
That's not a real crab cake. It's not even here.
Dude, it's unbelievable. Well, I know. See, after every Preakness, I went to so many, and after the Preakness, we would go to Dick Girardi's little condo thing that he'd rented, Jay Privman, Jay Hovde, Randy Moss, a couple others, and he would buy those Maryland crabs. He'd buy like 100 of them or 200 of them.
It's a bushel. We call that a bushel.
In a bag. You got that sauce. What's that, Old Bay? Oh, right?
Correct. Okay.
And then they'd have hammers, and they'd teach you.
Cut your hands, or did you not play with it?
Oh, we dug deep.
All right. Well, next time you're in, we're going to do that. All right. So that is it. I'll take you to Costas Inn. I'll take you down to Fadley's, and we're going to do it right. You and me.
What's so funny about it is it was like a fraternity party. There was no chips. There was no salad. Gretchen.
Just beer and crustaceans.
We had a couple drinks. It was just, we have a lot of Maryland crabs and we're eating them. And we would discuss the race and what I was trying to glance at the field. I have not looked at the form on this field. I'll text you the winner and you get that out on a subsequent podcast.
We'll do that. All right. Kenny Mayne, the main event. You can follow him out on Twitter. He's seven more and then done. And then at some point he'll text me and let me know what he's doing besides eating crabs with me at some point. Yeah, I love it. I appreciate you, man. Hit me deep, Kenny. Here we go. There you go. All right. Yeah, I got you, man. Appreciate you, brother. Stay safe. And thanks for being a part of what we do.
It was great.
Appreciate it. Kenny Mayne in his backyard about to go grilling in semi-retirement. He's now going independent. You can find him out there. We have Preakness coverage of wall-to-wall. All the names he dropped. Girardi's been on earlier today. My former colleague at the Baltimore Sports First in 1984. You can find me at Costas. You can find me at Fadley's. You're going to find me at State Fair next Friday as well. The Crab Cake Tour is getting underway. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop having those wise conversations brought to you by Wise Markets here at BaltimorePositive.com.